I hope that we'll have a couple of shiurim, maybe two or three, just to get through the basic halachos in review. Sefer that I'm using this year as a starting point is Pre-Tahara, which is a compilation of this shiurim given by Rav Forsheimer in Lakewood in his Chazar Shiur Mataras Mishpacha. So just very concise, to the point, Lamaisa, organized very, very nicely. So we'll use that as a starting point, and then we can discuss things from there. So to begin with, we'll focus on two simanim in Shulchan Aruch tonight. The first being Simen Kuf Pei Gimel, which is the basic introductory simen to Hilchos Nida. And the basic yesod of Simen Kuf Pei Gimel, very basic of all the basics of Hilchos Nida, is that what is required for a woman to become Tamei Anida Min HaTorah is a hargasha. A woman who sees dam accompanied by a hargasha, by a physical sensation, becomes Tamei Anida Min HaTorah. And regardless of how much she sees, if there is a hargasha that accompanies that Re'iyas Dam, that makes her Tamei Anida. And today, we obviously assume that even the smallest amount of dam that makes a woman anida will require the counting of Shiva Nekiyim of 7 clean days. That's obviously also a basic starting point for all the chasnida. The question is, what is considered a hargasha? What is considered hargasha and hatorah that makes a woman to me anida? This has very important ramifications, lahalacha. So the poskim quote three different types of hargasha. One is that a woman who feels a body tremor of sorts, nizdaza agufa, trembling, a tremor that goes through the body, which accompanies the re'iyas dam, that is considered a hargasha, which will make her tamei anida min hatorah. Nizdaza agufa, a body tremor. A second hargasha that's discussed in the poskim is sensing the opening of the uterus, psichas pi hamakar, which is somewhat difficult to describe, I guess, from one who hasn't ever experienced it. But poskim compare it to maybe like what someone would feel when the bladder opens, almost like maybe a little sting of sort, or a little, a sharp sensation. Psichas pi hamakar, sensing the uterus opening. That is the second type of hargasha that is described in the poskim that would render a woman anida min hatorah if this hargasha accompanies the re'iyas dam. And poskim points out that both of these two hargashas we just mentioned, both the opening of the uterus sensation and the body tremor, both of these are apparently not common, if at all, experienced today by women anymore. It could very well be that women's physiology has changed somewhat with the change in climate, diet, health, women's schedules, their activities on a daily basis. There are other issues that have clearly changed with regard to menstruation, physiology also, we'll see, but this apparently is one of them, that whereas poskim identify these two hargashas as common experiences in centuries past, they're no longer recognized today as reality. The third hargasha, which is, if any, the only one that might be relevant today, is not found in the Shulchan Aruch or an earlier Rishonim, but is actually debated by the Achronim. And that is, the Note of Yehuda is of the opinion that if a woman senses a moist flow internally, a liquid flow internally, that is also considered a hargasha that would render her anida min hatorah. It's called zibas davalach, feeling a flow of moisture internally. That would render her anida min hatorah if she senses that sensation. That is according to the Note of Yehuda. The Chasam Sofer disagrees, and he is of the opinion that this is not considered a hargasha min hatorah. So whether this qualifies as a hargasha or not is subject to a machlokas achronim. Everybody agrees that if a woman feels some external moisture, that's not considered a hargasha. They are discussing only whether an internal sensation of a liquid or moist flow is considered a hagasha min hatorah. And even that, machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Chasam Sofer. And to take it one step further, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that feeling this internal flow of moisture is a hagasha min hatorah, later achronim, namely the Chavos Das, states that even the Rabbi Yehuda would only consider it a hargasha if the woman senses that flow when it leaves the uterus into the vaginal canal, meaning it can just be already toward the opening of the body, but it has to be sensed from the very internal part of the body where it leaves the uterus into the vaginal canal. And if a woman does not sense it at that point of transition, that would not be considered a nida min hatorah, according to the Chavos Das' understanding of the Rabbi Yehuda. So, just to sum up, this last potential classification of hargasha is only if a woman senses a flow of liquid or moisture internally, she senses something leaving the uterus, going into the vaginal canal, and even that, if she were to sense that, it is still subject to a machlokas in Rabbi Yehuda and Chasam Sofer, whether that would classify as a hargasha or not, to render her anita min hatorah. And in all likelihood, women today, even if they do sense some internal flow or movement of moisture, of liquid, perhaps most likely is not going to be sensed at that early stage when it's already that internally inside the body that's leaving the uterus and only beginning now to go through the cervix into the vaginal canal. So even this hargasha, this last one, is, according to the understanding of the Achron we just quoted, also very unlikely in most circumstances. Now, the reason why this is very relevant is for the following. And this is where it could get into a very halacha lemaisa application. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Simen Kuf Tzadi that if a woman feels a hargasha, if a woman feels this physical sensation that normally accompanies a flow of blood, she is obligated to perform an internal bedika, an internal examination, to see what caused that hargasha. If she feels something that she normally feels when she becomes an ida, she has to, according to the Shulchan Aruch, perform a bedika internally to see, well, what caused that hargasha? If it was dam, if it was blood, then she's tamei anida right away. If it was some other bodily fluid which was not dam, then she would be tahora. But according to the Pesach and the Shulchan Aruch, if she senses a hargasha, she would have to do this bedika. So the question is this halacha still relevant for us today? Once we assume that the hargasha, the physical sensation of the uterus opening, is really not experienced anymore, and the hargasha, the physical sensation of a body tremor accompanying menstruation, is also not experienced anymore, so then this halacha of the need to conduct a bedika upon experiencing a hargasha wouldn't be relevant in those two scenarios. Question is, if a woman feels some sort of internal flow, is that also considered a hargasha that she would then have to perform a bedika immediately to see if she is anida or not? That's the question. So, Rabbi Willig, I recall, was of the opinion that since the entire assumption that a sensation of an internal flow of moisture qualifying as a hargasha is itself subject to a machlokas Nodi Bihuda and Chasam Sofer, and even according to Rabbi Yehuda, that an internal sensation of moisture flow is considered a hargasha, that's only as the Chavos Das limited it in a situation where she senses it at that early stage where it's leaving the uterus through the cervix into the vaginal canal, which itself is highly unlikely that she'd feel it at that earliest stage. So he thought that one need not be concerned about doing a bedika even when a woman feels an internal flow of moisture, because even if she does sense that internal flow of moisture, and even if we do assume, like the Nodi Bihuda, that such an internal sensation of moisture flow is a hargasha, in all likelihood she's not sensing it at an early enough stage when it leaves the uterus at that very early point to be considered a hargasha. And he therefore passed into that one would not need to perform a bedika even if sensing some internal movement of moisture. Okay, so that's why, number one, why this is a very, very important discussion as to what is classified as a hargasha. Okay, any questions on that before we move ahead? Okay. Another two important applications of this halacha are the following. Poskim say that if a woman performs a bedika, internal examination, and finds even the smallest speck of blood on that internal examination cloth, that renders her a nida min hatorah. Even the smallest speck of red found on a bedika cloth will render a woman a nida min hatorah. Why? Because there is a concern in the poskim that there may have been a hargasha that accompanied that release of that one speck of blood, but that hargasha might have been overlooked because it was masked by the physical sensation of the bedika cloth itself. So even if we assume that a woman is only going to become an edam in hator when there is a hargasha, nevertheless, on a bedika cloth, we treat it as if there may have been a hargasha that was simply overlooked or not noticed because it was masked by the sensation of the bedika cloth itself. And therefore, even the smallest speck of blood on a bedika cloth will be enough to render a woman tamei nidim in hatorah. That's one very important relevant application of this din of hargasha. A second, and also important relevant application of the din of hargasha is the following. If a woman finds blood in conjunction with using the facilities, in conjunction with urination, there as well, the concern is that there may have been a hargasha, a physical sensation that accompanied the release of the blood. And even if she says, I didn't feel any body tremor, I didn't feel any opening of the makar of the uterus, I didn't feel any internal flow of moisture from the dam, we still are concerned that there was such a hargasha, but again, it might have been masked by the sensation of the urination. And for that reason, blood that is found concurrently with urination might be a shaila of a de'oraisa of tumas nida. And it is based on that concern that poskim advise a woman always when using the bathroom to wait short period of time after finishing before using the toilet paper, so that in case there is any blood found on the toilet paper, it should only be found, say, 10 seconds or more after the woman was finished using the facilities, and therefore it would not any longer be a question as to whether there was a hargasha or not. Meaning if she only finds the blood 10 seconds after finishing using the bathroom, then we no longer have to assume maybe there was a hargasha, maybe it's a tumas nida min hatorah, because it was already set apart time-wise from the using of the washroom by about 10 seconds or 15 seconds or so, and therefore there is less concern of it being a nida min hatorah. That we'll get to again shortly, but that's a basic cardinal rule suggestion found in the poskim with regard to using the washroom and the need to be cautious to avoid any unnecessary shilas of becoming an Eidah min HaTorah in such a situation. Okay. Any questions on those two points? Yeah?
On the third type of hargasha that would render a person to Masiva and Raisa. So practically speaking, the same way we just had the practical advice on the last piece, it's a hargasha of internal moisture. So what is, how do we advise in terms of, let's say, a woman, what does one advise, let's say, a suffix? Do you think maybe not? No? Is it something just to, how do you deal with that?
So, meaning, if she senses moisture externally, that's not what we're talking about. That's not a question of nida min hatorah. And even if she senses, moisture near the opening of the body, of the beginning of the vaginal canal, that also would not be a concern. Even those poskim that treat the sensation of a moisture flow as hagasha would only treat it as such if she feels it deep inside, when it's leaving the uterus, going through the cervix, at that early stage. Pretty unlikely that a woman would sense it that far inside her body. If she's convinced that she did, then we might treat it, with more of a stringency, like a bedikah cloth, that as long as it's red, even the smallest amount would be a nidum in hatara. But I'm not sure if women, would generally sense it that early on in the process.
Right. So bizman hazeh, we say that the first two don't seem to exist. We don't have that sensitivity anymore.
Women don't identify that as experience that they are familiar with.
And the third?
Common?
Is it something that...
So also, I think, based on the limitations we just put on it, that has to be sensed at that early stage, going through the cervix, I don't think that's that common either, based on what I've been told.
Speaking, it doesn't come up that often.
Right. Which leads us to the next question, which is the following. If these three hagashos are the only three that would potentially render a woman a nidum in hatorah when sensed in conjunction with a flow of blood, then if, say, no one experiences any of these sensations, then how does anybody become a nidum in hatorah today? That's the basic question which today's achronim struggle with. And what Moshe Feinstein is quoted as having said is very simply that if a woman ever experiences a flow, meaning there's a significant quantity of blood, so that it's classified as a flow of blood, then that would presumably render her anita mehatorah. Meaning you can't argue in the extreme and say, well, if you don't feel a hargasha, there's no anita mehatorah today at all. That's extremely unlikely. That's almost the absurd. Meaning there is a din of nidum in hatorah. The fact that we don't experience the hargashos that are described by the poskim as accompanying the release of menstrual blood doesn't mean that there's, no nidum in hatorah today. So Rav Moshe therefore assumed that it must be that what we're saying is that whatever a woman experiences, a significant amount of bleeding, like she would when it's her monthly period, then that would render her a nidum in hatorah. Now that itself still is somewhat vague. What's considered a lot of bleeding? Now, so if a woman, at the time of the month when she's expecting her period, has a flow of blood, that obviously is going to render her nidum in hatorah. That's when she's expecting her period, and that renders her nidum in hatorah, clearly. That's a re'yes dam. When it becomes a little more difficult is what happens if a woman is on the pill and she's not supposed to be getting any period at all. And sometimes due to whatever irregularity of the hormone level, there's some breakthrough bleeding. And now she sees blood. So is that only a question of a kesem, of a shayla of nidah midrabanan, and you can apply the kulos of ksamim that we'll get to in a minute? Or is that a shayla of a deraisa, that it's her regular period, and therefore even the smallest amount makes her tamei nidah minatara? So when I spoke to Rabbi Willi about the shayla at one point, he said along these lines that if it's a flow, if it's significant enough to be classified as a flow of blood, then you have to assume it's tumas nida min hatorah. And again, it's still somewhat vague as to what's considered a flow. Woman, I guess, has to judge based on her experience, what her period is like and what a flow of blood is like, and then to determine, based on the amount of blood that she's now seeing, is this considered a flow or not? So in the absence of hargasha, you'd have to judge by whether it's considered a flow of blood, a lot of blood or not, to determine whether it's a nidah min hatorah or a shayla of kesem, a shayla of only tumas nidah midrabanan. So there is a bit of a vague gray area there, but those are the basic guidelines. Okay, any questions on that point? Okay. That's the introduction of Kuf Pei Gimel, of that which makes a woman a nida min hatorah. Okay, let's move on to Simen Kuf Tzadi, which is the dinim of kesem. And kesem obviously is that which makes a woman only tamei nida mejabanan, because it refers to a release of blood, a staining that was not accompanied by any hargasha, and based on the most recent definition we just offered, it also is obviously not a significant amount of blood that would be deemed to be her regular period, which would obviously make her nidim and hatara as well. Okay, so again, if there's ever a hargasha, which we said today is unlikely, it should be a nidim and hatara even with the smallest amount of blood that came along with it. Practical application of that would be if she finds a speck of blood on a bedika cloth. And secondly, if a woman sees a lot of bleeding, be it her regular period, or let's say even a woman who is on the pill and is not expecting her period, but still experiences a significant flow of blood, that would also render her anita min hatorah. However, if neither of those is present, it's not a significant flow of blood, it's not accompanied by any hargasha, by any physical sensation, then it is only a shaila of a kesem of tumas nida midrabanan. With regard to ksamim, there are a number of kulas that we employ. Since it is only tamei anida midrabanan, Chazal employ a number of kulas to prevent a woman from becoming tamei anida. Number one is a kesem that is too small. It's too small. If it is less than, if it is the size of a gris or less, then it is not tamei anida altogether. And the reason given for this by the Gemara is because in the times of Chazal, when hygiene was not what it is today, and women and men, people in general, lived in very close quarters with all sorts of bugs and lice and what have you, it was very possible that a spot of blood on a garment was not from a woman's body, but was from a live-in bug, which happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and got squashed. So for that reason, even though today we hopefully do not have such friends in close quarters, nevertheless, Chazal never imposed a tumas nida midrabanan on such a small stain of blood. So, since when they imposed the tikkun back in times of the Gemara, they said that anything which is the size of a gris or less might be a bug, and therefore, don't worry about it, those same guidelines still remain in place today, that anything which is the size of a gris or less is not tumea nida altogether. Generally assumed, psak halacha is the size of a U.S. penny, that any stain, even if it is absolutely red, even if it's on white, if it is less than the size of a U.S. penny, it is not going to be problematic. That is the measurement used by most poskim today. That's the general minhag today. So if a woman finds, you know, one small stain on her undergarments and it is clearly smaller than a penny, no need to worry. Number two, before I get to number two, I should point out the following. A stain that is not found on an undergarment, but rather is found on a woman's body itself. She finds a stain on her own body. There are some poskim that are of the opinion that a stain on the body we treat with greater stringency than a stain on a beged, and that it would be tamei even if it was less than a kegris. Nevertheless, Moshe Feinstein is quoted as having paskin in the Negus Moshe that on a body stain as well, less than a kegris va'od, small enough size is not going to be a problem. Okay, so lemaisa, even though it's machlokas achronim, Rav Moshe apparently paskins that on the body as well, one has that latitude that even on the body, a small enough stain is not going to be a problem.
So is it a gris size or a...
So the din is that a gris or less is okay, it's tahora. More than a gris is tamea.
Not the penny like on the undergarment.
I'm sorry?
not like the undergarment of the size of a penny.
No, both, no, halacha, both on undergarment or on the body, if it's more than the size of a gris, then it's a problem. Less, a gris or less, is okay. Because we treat both body and undergarment the same way. Less than a penny size is okay on either one.
So it's, so whenever we say gris in the U.S., it's U.S. penny.
Right. As U.S. penny is what we folks use today as the
gris size.
So as a gris size, right. If it's more than a penny size, it's a problem. Less, it's okay. Okay, what? What's that? Okay. Nevertheless, even in a situation where a woman, for whatever reason that we'll get to shortly, might not be tameya when experiencing a kesem, poskim will very often advise a couple to abstain from tashem shamita that night if a woman is experiencing staining, just as a precaution, because you want to avoid any possibility, any risk that what starts as staining might turn to something more significant. So if a woman finds that she's staining, even if throughout the day the stains were never large enough to be a problem, but might be advisable nonetheless as a prudent chumrah to not impose the hachakos, but to simply abstain from tashem shamita just for that night to see, is it going to clear up or is it going to increase in intensity? So that's just a word to the wise that many rabbanim will pass along in such a scenario, such a situation.
Is there any issue of how long she has to change routinely to avoid it turning into the size of a gris?
Yeah. There's no problem with changing to avoid the staining accumulating. It might still be a good idea to abstain that particular night from tashem shamita, because if she, Maisa, she's staining, you want to make sure that's not going to get worse as opposed to getting better. But to avoid becoming tameya, certainly she's allowed to change as often as she wants. That's not a problem. Okay. With regard to this kula of, you know, smaller than the size of a penny is not a problem, more than the size of a penny is a problem. Obviously, it's only a problem if it's larger than the size of a penny, if it's also a problematic color. In other words, if it's red and it's more than the size of a penny, that's a problem. If a woman has a stain which is the size of a quarter or half a dollar, but it's yellowish, not red, that's not a problem. If it's brown, it's also not a problem, although brown, it's often advisable to ask a shiloh on, because there's sometimes a very fine line between brown and red, and until somebody becomes familiar enough or comfortable enough with what is considered brown as opposed to red, it might be a good idea to ask on such shilohs. Yeah?
Just follow up on Mike's question.
Mm-hmm.
Can she change it to like Big Day Tzivonim so that she wouldn't have to...
100%. Yeah, she's a woman who's supposed to wear a Big Day Tzivonim for that reason. Right, I haven't even gotten that yet. But you're right, 100%, correct. Well, at least when she is during her Yimei Tahara, maybe not during Zayin Nikim. You know, the din of kesem, more than a penny, less than a penny, red versus brown, red versus yellow, applies either when she's in Zayin Nikim or whether she's in Yimei Tahara. But certainly Yimei Tahara, she should be wearing Tzivonim to avoid that problem, 100%. If a woman finds a kesem that is on white, and it appears to be red, but part of the stain is not red. There's red plus brown, which is a very common mix in the stain. And the stain itself is larger than the size of a penny. It's only going to be a problem if the red in the stain is more than a penny size. If there are numerous red spots on the garment, but they're clearly separate, distinct stains, we don't combine them and add them up together to see, aha, it's more than a penny size, it's a problem. As long as each individual stain, even if it's red, is less than a penny size, it's not a problem. However, if the stain is all one connected stain, but there's a spot of red in this part of the stain, a spot of red in that part of the stain, then you'd have to combine the red to see if it's more than a penny size, in which case it would be a problem. One important distinction in that regard, however, is the following, which is that when we get back to a stain found in a woman's body, we said that a woman's body, if there's a stain on her body, it also is only a problem if it's more than a penny size. However, there is one distinction between a stain on the body and a stain on a garment, and that is that on a body, if there are numerous spots of red, even if they're distinct separate stains, we would combine them to see if they add up to more than a penny's size or not. This is obviously something a woman has to do herself, because she can't ask such shilas in person. She can ask them, but she can't show them. The halacha is that stains on the body, red spots on the body, even if they're separate stains, separate spots, still you have to add them together and approximate if it would be more than a penny size were they all one stain. No, generally speaking, this is not a common challah, because if a woman is wearing close-fitting undergarments, most likely not going to happen. But from time to time, it could happen, and if that is the case, then if the stains that are red on the body add up to more than a penny size, it would be problematic. Okay, you mentioned already that during the Yemei Tahara, a woman is supposed to wear colored garments. Colored garments, because any stain that's found on a colored undergarment is not going to be a problem. Ideally, you want to get darker colors, because the whole point of this kula is that if you can't see what color the stain is, there's no way that you can determine that it's red. Now, Iker Hadin, even light colors, where you might be able to tell that it's a red stain, Lamaisa supposed to say, since it's on a colored garment, it's not a problem. But Lachatchila, obviously better if you can have a darker color, which I guess is what it helps the kula even more, so to speak. But Lamaisa, even lighter colors, brighter colors, not going to be a problem. Off-white poskim are machmir to treat it as white, and therefore a stain on an off-white garment would be a problem. Also, it's advisable to check. Sometimes women buy what they think is dark, black undergarments, and then find that there was a white lining put in for their convenience inside, which is not going to help us if we're trying to find begadim sivonim. So that's something to look out for. If an undergarment has a colored design on it, where it's a mix of white and other colors, and there is a stain found on such a garment, so there the halacha is that you look at the red that is on the white part of the garment, but not what is on the colored part of the garment. And if there is enough red in the stain that was on white in the garment, that would also be a problem. So, designs on undergarments which have a mix of white colors and other colors could theoretically pose a problem if there is a red stain found on the white part of the undergarment. Okay.
Do you mean the size? If there's a checkered board or whatever, the two whites?
Yeah, if it's one stain, you'd be mitzayef it. If it's two stains, you wouldn't. If it's one stain, but there's a black checkerboard in the middle of the stain, so you'd be mitzayef the white checkerboards from the part of the stain together, that you would be. This dinam of ksam would apply also to any other garment they're found on. If it's found on what happens sometimes is on a towel. When coming out of the shower, finds a kesem on the towel. Same halachas would apply. So it would be a good idea not to use white towels. Use colored towels, because they have the same problem. If you have a kesem on a white towel, then if it's red, it's a problem, if it's more than a penny's size. If it's a dark, if it's a colored towel, you avoid the problem altogether. Bed sheets as well. If there's white in the bed sheet and a stain found on that white bed sheet, might potentially have a problem if it's red and of significant size. If it's a colored bedsheet, you avoid the problem. Again, if a woman's wearing undergarments and pajamas or a nightgown, whatever the case might be, then it's not likely to find the kesem on the sheets, but sometimes it happens. So, better played safe than played sorry. Another kula with regard to ksamim is something which is not mekabel tuma, on which a stain is found, is also not going to be metame a woman. The reason for this is the following. The original takana that a kesem will make a woman tamei nida was really imposed as a chumra because of tumah v'tahara, foods that a woman couldn't eat or touch when she was tamei. It was a chumra that was imposed in times of Chazal when they were mzoher and makbid on tumah v'tahara, on truma and kadshim, karbanos. They wanted to impose added stringency, so they imposed tumas nida on a woman even without a hargasha, even with just a kesem. However, if the kesem was found on something which itself would not become tamei, so Chazal, Tosis explains, and nida felt that they couldn't impose tuma on the woman if the kesem which came from her, which is supposedly making her tamei, isn't even making tamei that which it's on. Well, it seems somewhat counterintuitive. The kesem comes out of a woman's body and lands on the ground. It doesn't make the ground tamei, because ground is not mekabel tuma. So how could it make her tamei if it's not making the ground tamei? It just didn't seem intuitive. So that reason, a kesem found on something which is not mekabel tuma is not going to make a woman tamei. That has relevance for a stain found in the bathroom, in the toilet, on the toilet. A toilet is mechubal karka. Something which is mechubal karka is not mekabel tuma. So a stain found on the toilet seat or in the toilet, even if it's red, even if it's more than the size of a penny, will not make a woman tamea nida because it's on a davar she'eno mekabel tuma. Now again, we mentioned earlier there's a concern. If a blood is found in conjunction, concurrently with urination, there might have been a hargasha there that was masked by the sensation of the urination. In which case, if it's a hargasha, she's tamei nida min hatorah. If she's tamei nida min hatorah, you don't have these kulas of ksamim, of davar she'eno mekabel tuma, she's not tamei. If it's a hargasha min hatorah, even the smallest speck of red makes her tamei. So again, that's why, again, it's critical that a woman not look to find stains in the bathroom, certainly not within 10 seconds of having used the facilities. You want to create that buffer zone to avoid any potential hargasha shilas in the bathroom. The same would be true if a woman finds blood on toilet paper. Toilet paper, as well, poskim say, is not mekabel tuma. Since it's not mekabel tuma, again, stain blood found on toilet paper is not going to make her tamei nida if it is a kesem. Again, to make it a kesem, you need that buffer zone so that it shouldn't be concurrent with the urination. The one-time poskim are concerned that stain found in the bathroom might be a hargasha min haTorah and treated more stringently as a dindo araisa. Would be if a woman was in a rush to get out. You know, if there was a pot burning on the fire, a baby screaming in the house that she has to get to. So she's rushing out of the bathroom and she's not taking time that you normally take. If she's rushing out of the bathroom and maybe perhaps stops herself short to get out and then finds blood right away as she's finishing the facilities, that might be more of a serious shaila, because they're already, you know, there's more likelihood that there was concurrent discovery of blood with urination. That might be more problematic. So if a woman ever is in a rush to get out of the bathroom, even more important not to look, not to find any potential shilas. Other examples of davar she'eno mekabel tuma would be, say, synthetic material. Pads, me'ikar hadin, rabbanim paskin are not mekabel tuma. So if a small stain is found on a pad, that would not be mekabel tuma. Again, only if it's a kesem. If there is a flow, it's not going to help you, because a flow we assume is nida min haTorah, it's ri'as dam. There's no kula there of davar she'eno mekabel tuma, oh, I'm not anida. But if there was just a smaller amount of blood, not a flow, but staining, and it was on a pad, it would not be mekabel tuma, and she would not be tamea as a result. Okay. Questions? No, we're good. Another kula by ksamim is if there is another source to attribute the bleeding to. If a woman knows that she has a maka, she knows that she has hemorrhoids, she knows that she has some source of irritation in the vaginal canal, she feels pain, she feels some sort of irritation, and it is possible that the stain that she found came from that source, then again she would not need to be concerned, even if the stain was on white, on a garment, more than a penny size. She has another source to attribute the stain to. She has a right to do so if it's only a stain, and she would then not be tameya. If a woman does find a kesem that is deemed to be problematic because it's red and because it's too large and because it's on white, and it makes her tumea, tumas anida midrabanan, so the din is that she treats it like it was nida doraisa. She has to count, wait 5 days before counting her seven. However, the halacha is that even if a woman becomes tumea tumas nida because of a kesem, she would not have to assume that it's like a re'ias dam with regard to veses. You know that the halacha of veses is that the day she gets her period this month, she has to be poresh that same day in the following month. So if she gets her period on Yud Zayin Teves, so the following month, Yud Zayin Shvat, she also has to abstain in anticipation of the possibility that she'll get her period again that same day. When it comes to ksamim, to a kesem, even if a woman experiences a stain, which is more than a penny size, and it's red, and it's on white, and it's on a garment, and it makes it tmei tumas nida, and she'll have to wait 5 days and count seven nikiyim, and go to the mikveh, make a bracha, and do the whole 9 yards, nevertheless, the coming month, on that date which she found the kesem, there's no need to be poresh. We don't take on the halachas of veses when we're dealing with a kesem. Okay, that is an important halacha. Yeah.
So if she becomes a nida at this spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then a day later she has a full period. Does that mean that the third day anniversary is wiped out?
Great question.
Or that we hold by?
Good question. So a woman who, let's say, before her period begins full force, has staining right before it, right? What happens then? That's your question?
Right.
So there are two issues that have to be discussed in that case. Number one is the five-day wait. We know that when a woman's period begins, she has to wait 5 days before she can begin counting Zayin Nikiyim. So a woman gets her period on a Sunday, she'll count Sunday as day one, Monday is two, Tuesday is three, Wednesday is four, Thursday is five, Thursday before sunset she'll do her Hefsiktara, and Friday will be day one of the seven clean days. So the question is, what happens if her period doesn't begin on Sunday, but staining begins on Sunday? And the amount of the staining was, you know, not extremely significant. You know, had it been any other day of the month, I would have said, oh, it's just a kesem, ignore it. But then Sunday night, let's say the period begins full force. So the first issue is, well, when does the five-day wait begin? So in that regard, the halacha is that if the couple started abstaining from Tashmish Shamita from the time the staining began until the period began full force, they were abstaining due to the staining. So then the five-day wait can begin with the day of the staining. Okay, that's number one point. Whereas if the staining begins on Sunday, period doesn't begin till Monday, but they were abstaining all night, Sunday night, because of the staining, so the five-day wait can begin with Sunday already as the first day of the five-day wait. You're asking also with regard to the veses, as when do you consider the period to have begun with regard to the veses? So, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that, you know, if the period started, you know, shortly thereafter, like an example you gave, or that we just gave, Sunday is staining, Sunday night is the period, if the period begins shortly thereafter, that there wasn't a break in between the staining and the period, but rather you go straight from staining into period, so if Moshe has a tshuva which it says you treat the day of the staining as the beginning of the period with regard to Vestos in that case. So that's an important halacha. I'm just trying to find the... Shuvan Igros Moshe and Yerodeich El Gimel Simen Mem Vav. And I think of Moshe's case there is where she saw staining during the day and then the period began that night, for example. It was the immediately following period. You know, staining was during the day, period begins that night. In that case, I think of Moshe is what he's talking about there. He says that that is a situation where you can count the Vesas from the daytime staining already. But that's the example he gives. You know, I don't know if you'd apply that to, let's say, you know, standing for 2 days and then period begins. Moshe's talking about a case where she was standing during the day and period begins that night, and there he says she can count the vestas from the daytime standing already, since that was clearly the beginning of the period.
So that's for the Yemei HaKarka, or that's for the following month?
That's for the what?
Yemei HaKarka,
No, that's with regard to the day of the month that she has to abstain in the coming month. The regard to Hachaka, she only becomes Anida when the flow begins. She's advised to abstain from Tashem Shemitah when the staining begins, but Hachaka is only kicking when the flow begins. But with regard to when is the date of the Vestos in the coming month, I guess we'll discuss this when we get to Vestos, but Rav Moshe's Tshuva says that the staining began during the daytime and the period begins that night, she can count the Vestas from the daytime period already.
Kind of 5 days, as long as she's Purush from Tashmish.
Right, kind of 5 days, as long as she's Purush from Tashmish, then she can begin the 5 day wait from the time the staining began, at which time she already was Purush from Tashmish already. Correct.
If she was Purush before, for some reason, they were Purush before staining even started.
I think it's only when there was a
reason
halachic reason to refrain from Tashmish. You know, posts can debate whether the doctor forbids them from Tashmish for some other reason, health-related reason. Does that qualify? That's debatable in the postgame. But it's only when there's a halachic reason to abstain. So, Rabbi Ulam, I discussed this with him, said, you know, if you're abstaining from Tashmish because of the Hilchas Nida concerns that standing has begun and I'm playing it safe, like we discussed earlier, then you would be allowed to wait the 5 days beginning with that day of standing. That's a Hilchas Nida related cause for refraining from Tashmish.
Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av would also count?
That's a good question. Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, again, we can discuss them because of the 5 day wait, but Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, the Shaila is more relevant in the following case. You know, Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, there's an Isha Tashmish, right? So if the period begins on that day, so you're counting the 5 day wait from that day anyways. If the period begins, you know, later, Mutzei Yom Kippur night or Tisha B'Av night, there already was a period of time in between Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av when you were muteris to one another. Meikar Din. So I guess the relevant application will only be if, right, somewhat difficult to conceive of a situation where, you know, Tzeizu Gachavim is 6:42 and boom, 6:42, you know, period begins. So then you can argue, well, she had no shas heter at all to her husband, you know, up until the period began. And then you can start the 5 day count, wait from before, from Yom Kippur. But that's kind of uncommon, I would think, that would come up. Okay, any other questions on Hagasha, Ksamim? Okay, I think it's a good place to stop. Unless there's anything else that we're missing that anyone wants to raise, any other.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay, we can end there. Yeah. Did 10 guys or at least 6 guys not have Marv?